I thought to speak about the family of fellowship. You know, it was God that set us together in families. It wasn't any man that invented this little, any sociologist or anyone like that invented this little unit, that we should live together in these little units. It was God's plan from the beginning. And if it was His, it must be right, mustn't it? Now, of course, we are sure it is right. And yet, I think that we are in danger of losing it today. And I would like to put in a word. You know, there have been people who have tried other plans. You remember the Russians tried a plan. They were about a 5-year plan, I think it was. The children were all living in dormitories, and the parents would live together. Well, the mothers would live together. They were going to have free love. But they weren't going to nurture the children with their parents. I don't understand they gave it up before the 5 years was up. Sounds it didn't work. And it just wouldn't work. I think in any other way, because this is God's plan. And we notice this throughout the country, I think, in the children's homes, too. You remember, we used to have quite a lot of children together in a home, and then we would have different workers with them. I suppose you had some of the same kind. But now the tendency is, I believe, in most of the churches to have little groups, and then have a house father and a house mother. You see, they just need that little bit of that togetherness, that fellowship, with a little group, just like God had planned. That seems to be the most effective. And I couldn't help but to notice, every once in a while, you read something about the hospitals. Well, perhaps you hear, too, about your friends, where they go to hospitals and the mother is permitted to be in with the baby. That little bit of love, you see. And they say it's right. On that one time we were visiting in a hospital. We didn't know the friend of ours was there taking training. And as we walked in, we hear he came down the aisle. And he had a baby in his arms. Cooing to it or mothering it. I don't know what you call it when a man does it. But it was mothering it anyhow. And all he said, this is what they thrive on, far better than what they get over there in the nursery. Now the hospitals learned that. What is this TLC? What does that stand for? Tender loving care. And the hospitals gave it to us, didn't it? I think the Christian church believed it, but after all, we didn't pass that out to the world, and it was the hospitals. Now they realize this wonderful something that God has given us that binds us together, and the importance of it in nurturing children. Now I would like to plead for that tonight, in your thinking, and perhaps in our actions. Maybe you agree to everything I say, but perhaps we'll have to do a little more toward working it out in our homes. I'm interested in this because I don't believe we can pass on our Christian ideals unless we are going to strengthen this togetherness in the family. Unless we're going to live closer together. There's too many forces pulling us apart. And the schools is one. Now, I don't say the Christian school does it. I read in PTA magazine, for instance, that, this man said that now the parents must just understand that the children belong to the school, and they must just give them over to the school. Whenever the school has a program on, they must let them come. No, I just didn't always let my children go when the school had a program. Because the home has a program, too. I think we'll have to weigh them and see which is the better. It's true where I live that the church almost ask for the children too much, too. Sometimes we think it's too much, don't we? Well, I believe this ought to be worked out, the school and church, especially your Christian day school, as you have it here, because you know your Christian school would have good purposes. But even then, they must not take the children away from the home too much, that you can't have a living together at home. I don't believe you can pass on to your children the ideal that you want to pass on, even though the church is good and the school is good, if you don't have the living at home. I believe God gave us this little family group for a reason. There's just a little bit of argument, a couple of illustrations. It isn't in living together where true religion is caught, and where religion is truly caught. I think that's much more effective than teaching by words. When they see it lived. I have a very striking illustration just happened lately. One boy was talking to another boy, and he said something like this. He said, you know what happened over at our house last night? Oh, he said, there was a man came to see my daddy, and he just got so mad, he said he just shook his fist right in his face. And what do you think? My daddy never got a bit mad. He said he never said a cross word. He said, I don't think he even felt mad. Felt mad. I suppose he thought he would have felt mad. Now, wasn't that a wonderful thing for this child to see? His father really acting non-resistantly. That was surely far better than his father sitting down teaching him anything about non-resistance. But right in their living, he saw this father living non-resistantly, and I think he learned something about non-resistance that he couldn't have learned through words. It is Mrs. Hamilton, perhaps you know some of her books, she gives this as a something she really believes. She thinks that when the mother, for instance, kneels to pray by the little one's crib, say, before the little one can understand much at all, prays audibly to God, and the child hears this day after day, she thinks that the child must come to know that God is a spirit. Just by her living with the child, she thinks that the child will come to know that God is a spirit. But after a while, the child knows that when you talk to people, and the person isn't present, he can't see, and he hears that wonderful attitude that mother takes toward this person. It must be a wonderful person this mother's talking to. The person must like mother. And I think he learns a lot of things about God, but particularly she thought that God is somebody very real, but not, but you can't see them. God is a spirit. I thought that that is very good. Just there in her prayer life, I wonder how many more things we teach by our prayers. And not by the, I don't mean by teaching about prayer, but just by our praying in the family. I think we teach more and more easily, and it's better remembered by our living than in any other way. I thought of this illustration. Now, we like to teach our children that the Christians live in limits. For instance, we enjoy living in limits. We don't have to have all these things that everybody else has to have, but we enjoy living anyhow. You know, the child, for instance, that has fewer toys is often far happier than the one that has so many toys that he doesn't know what he does want to play. Now, I believe that we can't talk very much about living in limits and maybe get it across the children, but I really can just live in limits happily, and the children can just learn to live in happiness. I know children that don't have to have a lot of things at all. And I can look back and I see why they don't. It's because of the way their parents live at home. They live simply and they live in limits. And so the children, they're not bothered with conforming to everybody in the world. It's easy for them to just be happy without. Not quite as easy maybe for the adults as it is for the children who would be nurtured from little up in such attitudes. But they're not so tempted, I think, to conform. Trusting God might be another illustration. It's not, you know what I say now, we ought to trust God. But isn't it what mother and father, the trust that they do put in God, that the children catch and learn? Suppose we have a loss. Can we still trust God and be just as peaceful with our God in the loss as we were when we had the property? I just heard of a wonderful father, well, a wonderful family, I would say, because they were a very closely knit family, someone told me. The father He lost his job and got a job, but it wasn't near as remunerated as the one he had just given up. And then they had their family council, and they talked about things, and the father just explained what he lost and how much different now their life would have to be, a little different because of the difference in the money. And he said one of the children started first and said, well, we could get along with less allowances, couldn't we? You could cut our allowance. And he said, went on after a bit, one of the children said, well, I believe, Daddy, we'd get along without any allowance for a while. But he said, best of all was next morning when the oldest boy came downstairs. And he said, Daddy, I was just thinking in the night that I don't need that new bicycle. He said, you and I will just fix the old enough. Now that family, you see, had something together, of course, in which that was built. And they were going to trust and live happily, even though they did not have so much at all. They didn't worry and fret about what might happen because they would have to reduce their budgets or change their plans. And one other illustration, it came to my notice. There was a family in our church. They all passed out of the church almost before I came on the scene as my husband's church. And just the old people were there yet, the father and the mother. And they seemed to be such spiritual people, I thought. They came to prayer meeting, attended all the meetings, and they were always quick to pray. But none of their children were in the church, and only one was a Christian and had a large family. I said, I just can't understand this. Bible says if you train them up in the way they should go, and they'll not depart from it. And I believe that's true. Well, then the niece said to me, she said, well, if you would know all I know, you would understand. She said, every Sunday morning, for instance, when they come home from church, even on the way home from church, perhaps, they would begin to tear the sermon to pieces and talk about the minister and how he didn't preach right and this and that was wrong. Then the niece said this to us. She said, now, would you want to join a church where the preacher was always wrong? Well, I guess you hardly would you? So you see, they didn't think, I don't think, what they were doing, but just by their attitudes toward the church and the way they treated the church and treated the minister, they turned all their children against the church. All but one. Even any church. Well, it's so much for illustration. I believe that it is in the living that we can do more for our children than by talking. And particularly, it's not much use for me to talk to my girl about how we ought to treat the neighbors if I don't treat the neighbors. Right. It just counteracts all my teaching, doesn't it? It's hard on all my teaching. But I can, by the grace of God, live right with my neighbors, and my daughter will catch it. I don't think I can keep her from catching it. Well, may we think together a bit on a few ways in which we might achieve some of this togetherness. How could we have closer family living and live together not only more times but richer while we are living? I want to give you another illustration that I just got from my father. He said that the party he was working for, I think it was selling machinery if I remember right, well, they asked him to go on the road and he would be gone from Monday morning to Friday night. And they just hesitated on this a long time because what did it do to their family? Why, they said they just couldn't be together all week long, and he just thought he couldn't. And the children didn't think either his daddy should, and they just didn't think they could give him up and so forth. Well, they considered this, and they still, business concerns still kept asking if he would not go. Anyhow, to make it short, they finally decided he would go. And this is the way they worked it out. He would come back Friday night and never do a thing after that at the plant. Friday night, he was absolutely done. All the books and everything was closed. So Saturday and Sunday were together as a family. And while he was gone, he rode home every day. And the men will please take notice. He wrote home every day. He sent usually something. Yet he said that he just tried. He had his children on his heart, he said, and his wife, and he would think of things that he'd see, perhaps he could enclose a little something, or just a little picture or something, you know, maybe the hotel where he stayed, or he'd tell them about the machines that he sold and so forth. He always had a little something to keep them in touch with him. I don't know how it was so good, you see, they were just with their father. That's extra good father, I think. That does that for his family. Well, anyhow, then the one child was to be the chief planner for what they would do over weekend, Saturday and Sunday. Every week they would take a different one. They had five children. And he said they never had as close fellowship before as they now did. He said it was wonderful. Before it had just been kind of slipshod, you know, and really they thought it was rich. But now they really worked at it. In spite of his vocation, which seemed to be against them, and they had strong fellowship. But they paid a price, didn't they? I think that we have to pay a price. I don't believe it's automatic. I believe that it will cost us something. One thing I think it will cost is that of accepting every child in the family. In the first place, the husband must fully accept the wife, and the wife fully accept the husband. I believe there are too many, even so-called Christian families, where they don't quite accept each other. They just don't quite like everything about the partner enough to be fully satisfied. Now, I don't think that I'll ever live with my husband won't find some fault with me. I won't be able to see some, but he doesn't tell me about them all, of course. But I know that I won't ever be a perfect woman. But I must be accepted by him, and he must be fully accepted by me if we're going to build this family together. If there's any kind of barriers at all, anything that you hold, one against the other, those should be broken down. And I think they can be broken down by the grace of God. And then in the next place, I believe you can't do much of anything toward building a family if you don't accept every child you have. Everyone. Without any comparison, still thinking, well, I just wish John would be like Harry. One mother told me, she said, oh, I'm just so happy. She said, you know, Harry can already do at 10 what John couldn't do till he was 12. She said, right in the presence of both of the boys. Now, I think she hurt her relationship with the children, didn't she? And she hurt Harry and she hurt John. She probably hurt their relationship to each other. The one, I guess I'm smart. I'm smarter than John. And John had to think in some way he must have disappointed his mother. There was something wrong. He probably would never know what was wrong, but there's something wrong. Because mother wasn't satisfied with his growth. Well, now we know that the boy could... They couldn't all come out together. So we must accept them, I believe. Fully accept them. In our heart of hearts. And suppose you do have a child that is a bit... What you might say is only unlovely. That's the one that needs the love more than any other. The unlovely child... that is greatly in need of love. And I believe we can love any child that God has given up. I think sometimes we have a little problem when children come close together, you know. We must accept them regardless. And if they come with the color of hair or something that you didn't anticipate, or if they come with the wrong sex, it's foolish to anticipate any sex, I believe. The doctors tell us so, and I think that's right. Because it might hinder our acceptance of the child. Each one must really be glad to belong to this family because he just feels that every other member of the family is very happy to have him. There was a boy who came to school, a sixth grade boy, and the teacher noticed, after dinner this was, after lunch, teacher noticed that he was just about to cry. Well, now, sixth grade boys don't just cry for nothing, you know. And he tried to keep it back, but she kept watching from the side. And after a bit, he did break down. So she approached him. If there's anything she could do for him. Well, he said that he knew for a long time his parents didn't want him. Today, he knew it for sure. Well, how did you know that? Well, for dinner, Mother gave me the smallest plate because she didn't want me to eat so much. Now, of course, they had some different sized everyday plates, I guess, and it just happened that he got the smaller one. But you see, he was looking for it. He had felt it, hadn't he? Or he would never have noticed that if he hadn't felt it before. Well, the teacher... After a good talk with the boy, she also talked to the parents, and the parents had to acknowledge that they were in the wrong, that they had given this boy, really given him, some reason for his thinking. We don't want to just tolerate our children, but you can't build a fellowship if you don't have real love for everyone in the family. I think the parents must go more than halfway in this, because they're the mature people. And you can't expect the children to come to you. In the second place, I believe that one thing that builds is there must be communication. We must be able to talk together. And we must talk together. We must find time to talk together. And we must arrange that there shall be subjects for the talking together, the thinking together. Since we are human beings, I think we have to associate in that level of our minds. Now, If we were not, we could just sit around a table, put our feet under the table, and we could be a good family. But then that doesn't make for family fellowship. We have to think together and talk together. If the men will pardon me, I would just like to speak a word. Someone told me not long ago, did you know women ought to keep silent in church? And I don't want to say talk too much as a woman, especially to the men. But I believe that one thing that would strengthen our communications very, very often would be if the father would share a little more of his life in the home. Share his vocation, particularly. That is, if the children would know, you know, what father's doing and appreciate what father's doing. And if they would know that father's doing some good work for the people in the world, well, they couldn't get along without father, you know. They need my daddy. See, the children must feel the importance there. I think they must have something to bind them to father. So often he's so absent from the family. I was in the composing room the other day, and I saw a father bring in his little son. I suppose he wasn't quite two yet. And he sat him up on a table there, and then he could watch his father run a linotype. But now, I think what he brought him in for was just to give him a little view of what his father does when he's gone all day long. I thought that was very, very good. He didn't know much what he was doing, but, you know, he could think of it, and that would be wonderful, you know, making all these keys go. Great daddy I have. And he would begin, you see, on the way to appreciation, and share with your wives, too. I've met wives already that say, well, I just don't know much about what my husband does do, but he works for so-and-so. We ought to know what our husbands are doing. Tell us. Share your lives with us. I believe if we want our children to come home from school and share their lives with us, and we like that, don't we? We like to know, you know, what they're thinking about and what's going on to them. We must share our lives. I believe that from little up, the father and mother have both shared and shared with each other. There it begins there. You have to share with each other, and then you share later with your children. I believe that'll bring our children to communicate with us. And that'll give us, you see, something to talk about and something that will draw us closer to together. Reading together is a very good thing in the family. Do you want something to read together? I think the set of books I've had the most testimony on, families reading together, is Laurie and Gowilder's little house books. I suppose so, a number of you know those. Those are great family reading. The whole family would enjoy them. I don't believe that we are too old to read things that our children will enjoy. I know sometimes I've read to my daughter, say, for instance, she said, Mother, you're not thinking. So she knew I wasn't there, you see. I was thinking about dinner or something else. But we have to be there when we read with them. But I think we can do that with great pleasure and great profit. And the greatest thinking together, I believe, the highest type of thinking together that you can do as a family is when you think about God, when you have worship. Family worship. Perhaps we should be sure to see that it's family worship, not just worship that father and mother can do, but we want to have a family focus so that we can all come to God. Now that'll have to be a family situation, a family problem, or a family something to praise for, or a family or something around a family need. I just read one that Dr. Richard Lenz wrote here in his wonderful book on family worship. And he said the son received a new bicycle. Now, the father had given some money, and the boy had saved, of course, from his allowance, and his sisters had given some money from their allowances, and I forget how mother had gotten some money, but anyhow, they had all together helped, and that was a very good point, too. And then when this bicycle came, they brought it into the room, and they had their family worship right around the bicycle, and which the boy, which they thanked God for this bicycle and so forth, and dedicated, and he said the most remarkable thing was to hear what the boy said when he said that he'd share this bicycle. He was telling this to God. He said, I'll share my bicycle with my brothers and sisters. Now, this had never been suggested to him, you know. It was just out of his heart. And he said, I will take very good care of the bicycle, God. And the more things like that that he put in his prayer. And then he said to hear the other children pray. Said how glad they were that their brother got a bicycle, and they'd be glad to ride it sometimes and so forth, and they're thankful they have such a kind brother and so forth. Now, I believe that God was in their living. And as a family, for instance, take your problems to God. As a family, any loss that you would have, any danger you would be in, or any loss of, the loved ones now by death or something like that, but especially if anything that concerns the children, or any projects that you have as a family, there are many things I think that we could focus our worship about. You can't have some of the studies that you might like to have, but you'll have to have those alone, husband and wife, or private, but be sure that your whole family goes up to God in some praise or some petition or some confession. Therefore, it'll have to be a family focus. I mean, that's genuine family worship. And you can always find scripture for every need. Now, it takes a little more work, doesn't it? If you just open a book and there is something that's all planned for you. But it will surely bring God into your family living. Again, one thing you will build, I believe, is that you cooperate in the housekeeping. It ought not just be mother's house, but it ought to be our house. Now, how can children really say, come over to our house? Well, I believe it has to be that it really belongs to them. And not just over to mom's house or dad's house. It's more often mom's house, I guess. I think that's because she does all the work. Almost all the work. But I believe that that's the best evidence you can give to your children that belong if they have some part in making this home go. Then they really feel that they belong. Now, you don't feel you belong to a committee if you sit off the edge and never take any part, do you? No, you don't hardly belong, even though you were appointed to be on that committee. But it's when you participate, you see, and help to make the thing go, then you just know you belong. It gives you status. It recognizes you're worth a little something, doesn't it? When you can get into the group. And everybody in the family must be worth something, and they must know they're worth something. The Bible says we're to think of ourselves not more highly than we ought to think, but that ought means we must think something of ourselves, and the children must think something of themselves, too. Well, let's all keep house together. We can't get along without anyone. We were in such a fine-spirited home, and I just rejoiced when the little boy said, come, Mrs. Irvin, I want to show you something. So he took me in his bedroom. He said, this is my bedroom. And he said, I made my bed. Now, he says, you see some bumps, don't you? But he said, there are many more bumps like that. I forget when he told me when he started. But he said, now, I always make my bed. Mommy never makes it over, either. Would I be willing to have any guest walk in and see a bed with bumps? Cooperate on your problems. I've mentioned some already, so I should cut this short. I really believe that the Christian family ought to have the family council where you work together on your problems. I have a striking illustration. I go around, you know, so much, and I meet so many fine families. I guess I gather too many, but I love to get them. This family said that they just had a family council. They had a little problem. So the children come home after school, and they were all hungry, and this one would go and grab this, and this one this, you know. One of them, Mom, isn't there anything that I could eat? And so forth. And so they just had to sit down and talk this over. And that's what a family council is. You just together make your plans. You know, consider your problem, make your plans. And she said, they made the regulations. Now, I forget the details, but they were just eat this, this, this. There were a few things they could eat after school. And then the dishes had to be left so, the sink had to be left so, and anyone who didn't leave it so, whose turn it was or whatever, that one didn't eat the next day. Well, she said the problem just took care of itself after that. Now, I suppose she had fussed and fumed maybe some about it before, as I might have done, and scolded maybe and nagged. But then we sat down, had a little counsel together, then it went off nicely and smoothly. And especially if children make their own regulations, well, then they are willing to follow them. One time we were invited to a home, and as we approached it, it was a farm, and on the barn it was printed. I forget his name, we'll say Thomas Good and Sons. Oh, yeah, I said, why, these are little boys that I know, because I just met these little boys at the church, about maybe fifth and sixth grade, or fourth and sixth. I said, he doesn't have any older sons. Well, we drove on in. But we learned that we were in that family. We weren't there so very long until it was run by the father and the sons. In the same way in the houses, the mother and the daughters, they were working together. This was a cattleman. And you don't have heard the boys talk about their cows. I get the milk cows or meat cows, maybe you call them. I forget now, I just thought they were. But they were cattle anyhow. I believe that children kind of lose a little respect for parents if everything is done for them somewhere or other. I don't believe really that they appreciate us if we do everything for them. Because, you see, it kind of lowers, just if they couldn't. So I believe you are giving status to your children. You are helping them. Instead of weakening their personalities, I believe you're strengthening if you will take them in on the housekeeping, and this includes father, too. It's pretty hard on father, but I believe that it does. My husband had a very stiff back. Was it last Saturday a week ago? We had washed the bathroom walls down. He told me pretty often about his back, but I've had stiff backs too already, haven't you? Some work. I just didn't see anything about it. It surely does look good. It surely does look good. And one thing that I think is so good while you work together, you have time to talk together. Now, this is a little problem that I see in our modern gadgets. If you have an automatic washer and a dryer, how are you and your daughter going to wash together and have time to talk together and think together? Mm-mm. Machine does everything, doesn't it? And even mother will probably go off to another job. I usually wash while I get supper or breakfast. If you have these we used to mow the grass, remember, and then we'd have to go along and rake it, and then we'd have to pile it up, and I can just remember what fun we had in all this, and when Father with us and the other children together. But we couldn't do that anymore, because the mower takes everything up as it goes. It's all done in one operation. It may save time to do some of these things, but does it better family living together? I think that's something to consider. One man told me this. He said, well, my wife just works hard at something. I forget, was raising chickens or something, to get a modern convenience. And that's to save time and energy. And as soon as she has it, then she starts on another one. He said that's all she's been doing for years, just working for these modern guys. So it didn't save any time, did it, or energy. But now my plea is, when are you going to talk together? If you're going to use mixing, you know, it's just done up that quickly. But it's when you were making cakes together, when you're getting things together, assembling and so forth, when those good times, when you're out, we don't have chickens anymore, I guess, to go out and gather eggs. Most of us don't live in the farm anymore, but it seems to me we'll have to work for some of those things. Well, I ran across a very fine mother. She said that their boy, they lived in town, and they just had a few square yards back of their house. There was just no chores. And this boy was now 12, and she felt they were just drifting apart. In fact, he was drifting kind of sullen. He had no other brothers or sisters. And so he said, one morning he went with her to the market. And she just thought, well, I'll sure make this an enjoyable visit for him. So she did all she could indirectly to make it enjoyable. And he wandered along every morning to the market. And to make it short, now he's buying all the groceries that she never goes to market. And he buys far better than she could. He studies the brands and studies the prices in the papers and so forth. And he studies what they ought to have in a good diet. And she said, best of all, he wants to cook now in the kitchen. And we have good times together. I never could tell before what my son was thinking. And now we talk together. You have to have something to do together to be together. Don't you feel that way with your husband sometimes? If you just have something to do together, then maybe you could be together and talk together a little. But it seems life just takes so many of those things away from us, this modern life, at least. Well, one other point I jotted down there, I think it prepares our children for homemaking, too. I believe if you send out a son that has helped in the family, you're going to give some woman a far better husband. Much better attitudes toward building a home. And the same would be true of the daughter, wouldn't it? Send out a daughter, not one who is just going to run around and make living hard for her husband because she's not interested. But we want to build interest in homemaking. Let them live happily in a home, making the home, and we will send them forth much better wives and husbands and parents then, too, because they have experienced that in their own homes. We should play together with our children. And that's pretty hard. It's not so hard, maybe, for the father to buy an electric train or something like that he would like to play with, you know. But to play with the children... They don't want us to bat the ball, but they want us to do what? Pitch the ball. But Father or any of us would much rather hit the ball because they miss it most of the time, maybe. But that's what that's playing with them, you see. Giving ourselves to them. And I believe we can't get much closer to our children any other way than we can through playing with them. Especially if we will give ourselves. Have lots of fun in your family. Lots of fun together. And may I suggest one other briefly, and that is serving together. I believe that, we're Christian families. And it is God that puts these good service thoughts in our minds, in our hearts. But now, if you do it together as a family, you're going to get much closer living, and I think we're going to send forth better children, too. They'll be much closer to God. But at Christmas time, there were two families came to our door to carol. I don't suppose the singing was as good. Now, they had to work on, you know, before they ever came, and think what fun they had planning and so forth, and I know they went to one old person with some gifts, too, a person that needed some gifts. And they prepared the gifts as much as possible themselves. We sent forth Christmas bundles. I guess you people do, too. All the churches do. But so often they're all planned by the church. Sunday school classes and such like. And here this year, when they brought in the Christmas bundles, well, here came three families up with a Christmas bundle. And each one had a number of children. Well, I thought, that is just a very good idea. In fact, some of the children told me what was in their bundle. He wanted to come up and he couldn't open it, you know. It was pinned shut. But he told me what was in the bundle. You see, he was interested in it. And he went with this bundle to some poor children in a way that he probably maybe couldn't go so well, at least if it was... you couldn't have built a family togetherness so well by having it over in a Sunday school class. Of course, he could have gone with his children. Why don't we visit the sick as a family? Teach us all how to behave, and I think we won't get in the hospital. Of course, the children can't go into the room in the hospital, but there's certain sick we could visit. There's certain poor that we could visit without even knowing they were going to somebody that's poor, because we don't want ever to give the children this idea that one is up and one is down. But we could carry gifts as a family. We could serve as a family. Now, all that I've been trying to suggest, I think, is only possible in a Christ-centered home, because most families, without Christ, you wouldn't have such movies, would we? And we don't care to pass on our ideals. Now, these poor children in the world that have no Christian ideals, they don't come from homes, you see, where they are together and where they are leading them by their living. They just don't have such living situations. But let's, as the Christians, hold to this living together. I believe it's the only way we can hope that we can pass on to our children. I don't say this against the church, or nothing to say against the church, or against the Christian school, but the home is basic. And I don't think the church and the Christian school can ever do what the home is supposed to do. Well, under God, I believe that there is no substitute for the ability and the willingness of parents to live with their children. We just can't get it from any other source. We just must give ourselves. I think I'll take a borrowed term, which, you know, I say, may you have real good living in your families together. God bless you abundantly. Thank you.